part of uni, we can choose a topic to write about for one of our units. And it was when I was choosing a topic, this had just come out, and I've always been fascinated with citizenship. So I thought, why not just write something about it?
And what did you notice?
So I just started off writing generally what the law is and my opinion on the law. However, then I stumbled upon this Commonwealth citizenship with the right of abode in UK law. And I was like, and I was just thinking, this seems odd. People seem to be, this surely falls within the entitled to the rights of privileges, sorry, rights and privileges of citizens of other nations. So I thought, I did a bit of digging, and lo and behold, I stumbled upon this.
And what did it say? What was it that you saw?
So basically, under UK law, a Commonwealth citizen may hold the right of abode if they were born prior to 1983, if one of their parents was a citizen of the United Kingdom or its colonies by birth, and they've continuously held that Commonwealth citizenship. With a lot of people being from the UK originally, I thought this might, you know, impact Australian politics. So I had a bit of a look on the citizenship register, which was made available on the Parliament's website. And yeah, much more than I thought it'd be, 26. And yeah, 26, including some former PMs.
I mean, it's including former PMs. It's quite phenomenal, isn't it? And I mean, there's a lot of people listening that would go, oh, well, I qualify for that too. You know, I mean, my father was born in London, for example, and it's got to be a common story, right?
Yeah, the thing is, what people don't realise is because the right of abode is essentially the most important right of any citizenship. It's the unrestricted right to live and work in the country in question. And the right of abode is only given to British citizens, except in this situation to certain Commonwealth citizens. So normally, people who held British citizenship would experience their rights through their British citizenship. However, they still have the second right, which for, you know, people like Bill Shorten or people who derived the right from their father, even if they renounce their British citizenship, they still have this claim to right of abode from their Commonwealth citizenship, their Australian citizenship.
That part seems strange to me because a lot of legal minds would have gone through this with a fine-tooth comb. Are you surprised that you were the first person apparently to discuss or to discover this?
I was a little, but then, potentially I was thinking maybe, you know, they were thinking too complex, where citizenship law is relatively simple just for the average person to understand. And look, it has, like you mentioned, has been peer-reviewed, so there's some merit in the argument as well. So, yeah.
So, is it something that you can renounce?
There's no formal process, which is interesting because there's a form with the UK Home Office that ticks what you can renounce. This isn't one of them. So that is another interesting question which, you know, comes into play. However, it is clear from the UK Immigration Act that the UK Secretary of State can deprive someone of their right of abode. And you'd think, and our constitution allows for reasonable steps to be taken to renounce something that can't be renounced. So even you could think a reasonable step would be these MPs writing to the Secretary of State, UK Home Office, requesting their right of abode to be deprived. What would be considered reasonable steps is anyone's guess. Only the High Court can determine that. However, what's clear here is that no one really took any reasonable steps to renounce this right. The only steps that were taken was by some who had British citizenship to renounce the British citizenship. But as we can see from the previous High Court decisions, renouncing one citizenship doesn't mean you're off the hook for another thing.
Yeah. And they haven't thought to ask to be renounced from their right to abode. It's not something that a politician has considered up until
now. Nothing that's been declared, you know, in public forum. So, like, nothing on the citizenship register from the previous parliament or the nomination forms from the AEC this election. Look, maybe they've thought of it in private, but nothing they've never said that they have tried to. No one has publicly said that they've tried to renounce this.
We're talking this morning to Hassan Al-Asidi, who is a law student who has stumbled across something that is quite remarkable, because you came up with a list, as you mentioned, of 26 politicians. You teased by saying including some former PMs, I think you said, and you mentioned Bill Shorten as well. So who are some of the names of people that are involved in this?
I mean, you've got names from across the political spectrum. You've got Adam Bandit, Chris Bowen, Bill Shorten, Ben Morton. You've even got some people who were disqualified last time for having British citizenship but might still be disqualified for this Commonwealth right of abode thing, including like Jackie Lambie or Malcolm Roberts. So it's the list of 26. And then you also start to wonder with Julia Gillard and Tony Abbott, because they would also fall within this.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount of people who could have had this previously is endless. But, you know, currently there's 26 in the new parliament, I think about 4 or 5 of which were already had to were from the previous 15 who were affected by Section 44.
Mark Butler, Rachel Siewert, Dean Smith, you know, local people, you know, Eloise Pratt.
Fair few West Australians.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be a lump in their throats, I think, this morning when they just go, oh, goodness, we thought we'd pretty much dealt with this. I mean, you know, will they get turfed out of Parliament, do you think?
Look, it's a bit of a complex one. Even if this does go to the High Court, which is, to be honest, isn't really in anyone's... Even it's in the interest of understanding what the Constitution is and having certainty to the legitimacy of our Parliament. However, it doesn't seem there's any political will to do this. And even if there is, even if someone, you know, from the ordinary public does object to the election before the time's up, and it goes to the High Court, as we saw with the previous by-elections, the people who were disqualified got back in. So at least with the lower house members, it doesn't seem to be like their political career is over. And even with some of the senators who've come back, they'll likely fix their problem and try to come back into politics. It's just that at the end of the day, this is the law. This is disagree with Section 44(1). This is the law that's in place. This is the law that all politicians have said they are in compliance with when nominating for election. And citizenship law is relatively straightforward. So it's a bit concerning that these people didn't do due diligence when they're the ones drafting our complex laws, which can affect everyday people.
It is 17 to 9. This story is remarkable, isn't it? Hussein Al-Assidi, Murdoch law student, is my guest. Did an assignment, managed to find that there was a little-known clause in the Constitution which could cause grief for 26 current and former parliamentarians. I mean, there are other people on the list. I mean, as you mentioned, some of them are no longer in Parliament, but John Alexander and Michael Keenan, who recently stepped aside, is another name that's on the list. I mean, it's an impressive name of list. How do you think, because it's bipartisan, I mean, it's shared, isn't it? So how do you think politicians are likely to deal with this?
They're probably just going to try, you know, like I said, write it out till time's up for the public to object to the election and then just hope it goes away. Because then after that, they would have to refer themselves. And look, it seems unlikely from the lack of, well, response or lack of, that they really want to deal with this.
Is this the best work you've done so far, do you think?
Or did get my highest mark.
What was it?
Oh, it was up there.
It's truly remarkable. It's fantastic. People will be enjoying your story today, I think, Hussein. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Terrific to spend the time with you. Hussein Al-Assidi joining us on ABC Radio Perth, a remarkable story for a student. Imagine if you were his lecturer and also co-author on this research. Lorraine Finlay is that person, a constitutional law expert who's also with us now. Lorraine, good morning to you. How did you feel when you saw Hussein's assignment come in last year?
Oh, thank you for having us both on. And look, I was a little bit incredulous when Hussein brought this to me, because we've been talking about Section 44 for 2 years now, and no constitutional expert that I know of has looked at this issue and has come up with the same approach that Hussein came up with. You know, I think it's a testament to the hard work that he did. He really pursued this idea, and he managed very quickly to convince me that I think he's right, and I think there is a very real issue here that needs to be tested. So on the one hand, I'm really excited to see a student doing work of this quality, and on the other hand, a little bit embarrassed that none of our so-called experts who've looked at this for so long had actually come up with this before.
We got in touch with the Greens, Labor, the Liberal parties this morning. The Greens said they didn't have anything to say at this stage. The Liberal Party hasn't actually responded yet, and all the Labor Party would say is that all MPs and senators complied with candidacy requirements at the 2019 election, end quote. How can that be true, or how can they be sure, given what we've come up with here?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because that's exactly what the ALP said all throughout the last saga, up until the point when their members were disqualified by the High Court. So I think the important thing about this article is nobody is saying that these members are disqualified definitively. What we're saying is this is an issue that hasn't been considered by the High Court. It's an extension of the Section 44 issues we've been dealing with in the last few years, and it hasn't come up before. So in our view, it's simply something that raises significant questions. And as much as we'd all love to put Section 44 behind us, the difficulty here is it's the Constitution. You can't pick and choose which parts of it you follow. We actually do need to see this through and make sure that every single member in our parliament is constitutionally eligible to be there.
So do you expect this to go through to the High Court? Is that how it will likely play out?
Look, I don't know how it's going to play out. I mean, it really does depend on how the politicians want to respond to it. But I do think there's a question, and I think the Australian people deserve to have that question explored and answered. And look, at the end of the day, I think Hussein raised the point that in the past, when people have been disqualified, they've generally been returned by the Australian people, and most of these parliamentarians have just been re-elected. So I don't think that anybody wants to see our parliament thrown into chaos or people disqualified from parliament, but we need to make sure that unanswered questions about Section 44 are clarified quickly so that everybody knows what the rules are, that the rules are being complied with, and we can have some stability in the situation.
I mean, is that a simple process? Can we just change Section 44 parts of it?
It isn't that simple. There could be a referendum to change it, but it would have to go to the Australian people to do that. The first step, really, though, is working out if we actually do have an issue here. And as we say in the article, we don't know. The High Court's never ruled on it. So I think the first step is a referral to the High Court, simply to work out if, in fact, this Commonwealth citizenship with a right of abode is disqualifying.
It's really good to talk to you, Lorraine Finlay. You must be quite proud this morning.
Well, I think it's a testament, again, to Hussein's really hard work. And, you know, the fact that the Constitution is something that is complex, but occasionally you just need to step back and go back to the basic principles, and that's what he's done. And he's come up with an argument that I think has a lot of merit.